Chapter 1. The King of the Knives. Under the watchful glare of mosaic saints, the floor was a lake of blood. The saints were ancient and imperial, and their names were mostly forgotten. Tesserae were missing in places, making their shapes ill-defined, their features indistinct, their frozen, pious gestures vague. But their eyes remained, weary eyes that had seen long histories pass, with all the blood and loss that histories claim as their price. Still, they seemed appalled. The eyes of some were wide, in astonishment or horror. In others, they were half-closed in denial. Some looked away entirely, as if it was too much to bear, diverting their gaze to the distance, perhaps to some golden light of promise that might appear on a far horizon and spare them from witnessing more atrocity. The blood was shin-deep. It had been dammed inside the great chamber's floor by the short flights of ooze-like steps that rose to each entry. It was bright, like a glossy red mirror, rippled by the movement in the room, glinting in the torchlight. It had frothed and clotted into curds around the piled bodies. Half-submerged, soaked in blood, they seemed like tumbled island outcrops rising from a red sea, or moulded plastic forms lifting from runoff liquid composite on a manufacturing rack. The hot stink of it was unbearable. The screams were worse. Damagawa Orlot oversaw the work, hands behind his back, barking orders to his sun pack. Sons of Sek brought the captives in one by one. Some struggled and fought, shrieking and spitting obscenities. Others came placidly, stunned by the fate that was overwhelming them. Each of the sons had made more than one visit to the chamber, and their ochre battle gear was dappled with gore. From the very sight of them, any prisoner brought up from the pens knew what awaited them. Even when they fought and cursed and had to be beaten and dragged, the sight and smell of the chamber silenced them. Some fell mute, as if dazed. Others wept. A few prayed. The chamber was the inner precinct of the Basilica of Chiodrus on Sadime Island, a holy place. That it had been transmuted into a hell was too much for most of the prisoners to bear. Orlot studied the next captive as he was brought in. The man stumbled, splashing through the blood, as though led to a baptismal pool against his will.
"Da Kenza," Orlot said.
"Hold him." The sons, big brutes, their faces covered by glowing optic units and the human hide leatherwork that stifled their mouths, obeyed, dragging the man upright. Orlot approached, noting the insignia and unit marks of the captive, the torn and filthy state of his uniform. The man flinched as Orlot lifted his dog tags to get his name. Kelemane. There was a paper tag pinned to the left breast of the man's tunic. It read, "Captured near the Tulkar batteries," in handwritten sanguinary block script. Orlot saw a tear running from the man's eye and wiped it away with his fingertip. The almost tender gesture left a smudge of blood on the man's cheek. Kelemane. Artillery officer. Captain. Helixid.
Kelemane,
Orlot said, switching to the clumsy language of the foe, of which he had some small measure.
"An offer. Renounce your god. Assent now. Pledge fellowship to he whose voice drowns out all others, and keep your life."
The captive swallowed hard, but didn't reply. He stared as if he didn't understand. Orlot tried to look encouraging. He had unclasped his leather mouthguard so that the captives could see and appreciate the honesty of his smile.
"Captain Kelemane," he said, "repudiate and pledge. Thus life is yours."
Kelemane mumbled something. Orlot leant in to hear.
"Join you?"
Kelemane asked, in a tiny voice.
"Yes."
And you won't kill me?"
Orlot looked solemn and nodded.
Then I swear,
stammered the captive.
Yes, please. Yes, I will serve your anarch.
Orlot smiled and stepped back, the blood pool swirling around his boots.
Bahuth Tetsa,
said Orlot. Bless him. One of the sons took out his ritual blade, the hooked skerret of the sanguinary worlds, and opened the captive from throat to sternum with one downward slash. The man convulsed, useless noises of dismay and loss coming from his mouth, and collapsed. Arterial spray hit the temple wall and jetted across the faces of disgusted saints. The sons let the body fall. How simply they fold, Orlot thought, when faced with something so brief as death. Where is their trumpeted metal? He whose voice drowns out all others has no use for cowards. Orlot resumed his place, hands behind his back.
Kith,
he said. Next. The sons waded back across the chamber and left. Two more entered, a Siddhar and a Paksan, flanking another captive. This one didn't look promising to Orlot. His black hair was matted with blood and dirt, and he evidently carried several minor injuries. But at least he walked unaided. The sons didn't have to drag him or frog-march him. Orlot approached, noting how the prisoner refused to make eye contact. There were no rank pins or regimental patches on the man's torn black fatigues, and the paper label was missing. Orlot glanced at the Sirdar.
Kinvoi trafa.
Where is his label? The Sirdar shrugged apologetically.
Dete hit?
Orlot asked. Circumstances?
Tietor turka, demagawa magir.
The Sirdar replied, and continued to explain that the captive had been taken alive after fierce fighting in the boat docks near the batteries. He had fought, the Sirdar said, like a cornered Ursid. Interesting after all, thought Orlot. A man of courage. He reached for the captive's dog tags. The captive did not flinch. Nkol, Recon, Sergeant, Tanith first.
Nkol,
Orlot said, in the foe's ugly tongue again.
An offer. I make this now. Renounce your god. Pledge fellowship to he whose voice drowns out all others. And keep your life.
The captive did not reply.
Repudiate and pledge,
said Orlot.
Do you understand?
The captive remained silent. Orlot considered things for a moment. The man was evidently strong. He had borne a great deal. He had not broken. This was the metal that the sons watched for. He whose voice drowns out all others had no place for cowards. But some could be too brave. This man stank of a silent defiance that would not submit and could not be broken. That was the way of things. Most were too weak. Some were too strong. Orlot glanced at the Sirdar, who already knew what was coming and was unfastening his skerret.
Bahuth Tetsa,
Orlot instructed. The blade flashed up. Orlot abruptly stopped the Sirdar's hand. He had noticed something. The captive had an insignia pin after all. A small, dark badge fixed to his torn collar. It had been blackened to dull its gleam, which is why Orlot hadn't spotted it at first. He unfixed it. A skull with a straight dagger placed vertically behind it.
Motekoi,
he said. Ghost.
Magir?
The Sirdar asked, blade poised.
Geshet Kedyata. Sek Enkea Sa Vahakan,
said Orlot. This is one of the special ones. The ones he whose voice drowns out all others has told us will lead the way to the victory. Orlot looked at the pin again, then slipped it into his tunic pocket.
Voi het tasporoi da,
he ordered. Make him ready for transport, The Sirdar nodded and sheathed his blade. Orlot looked at the captive.
Makrol,
he said, with a soft smile.
Vevoy, you are a ghost, ka? A ghost? Mordecai, ka?
The captive looked directly at him.
Nen Mordecai, he said. Geta Mortek.
Orlot jerked backwards. The Sirdar and the son started in surprise and looked at the Damagower, bewildered. The Imperial had just used their language fluently. I am no ghost. I am death. McCall lashed out with his right hand. The brass hookpin that had once fastened his missing label had been straightened and concealed in his palm. He punched it into the Paxson's neck, just below the ear. The son reeled away, yelping and clawing at his neck. McCall was already turning on the Sirdar. He grabbed the Sirdar's right wrist, snapped his arm straight, and twisted, forcing the officer over in a helpless, painful stoop. McCall brought his knee up into the officer's bowed face. The Sirdar dropped to his knees, lifting a spray of blood. McCall maintained the arm lock, reached over the officer's hunched back, and yanked out his skeret. He pivoted, locking the arm in a tighter twist with his left hand, meeting the charging sun with his right. The Paxson still had the pin jutting out of his neck. The ritual blade sliced through the son's throat. He staggered backwards, blood jetting between his clamping hands, and fell sideways, lifting waves that churned the surface of the blood pool. Orlot lunged at McCall. McCall kicked him in the gut and folded him up. Everything was slick and sticky with blood. The kneeling Sirdar managed to wrench his wrist out of the armlock. He tried to tackle McCall. McCall blocked him with a forearm, grabbed him just below the left elbow, and forced him to turn with another twist. The Sirdar barked in pain. He was rotated. McCall forced the trapped left arm up like the lever of a pump and punched the skerret hilt deep in the Sirdar's armpit. McCall wrenched the blade out, and the Sirdar dropped on his face in a violent splash. Orlot was trying to back up, trying to rise, trying to breathe. He floundered in the blood pool. He pulled out his sidearm, but McCall kicked it away. McCall grabbed him by the front of his soaked tunic, dragged him to his feet, and slammed him back against the mosaic wall. He put the skerret to the Damagower's throat. The saints watched, eyes wide. No one was coming. The sons in the anteroom outside were used to cries of pain and dismay echoing from the chamber.
What did you mean? Special ones,
McCall hissed.
Voice it, my language,
McCall whispered.
I know you have some. Why are we marked out by your anarch?
Ket nen,
Orlot gurgled. McCall pinned him by the throat with his left forearm and used the edge of the ritual knife to cut open the seam of the Damagower's tunic pocket. He fished out the Tanith pin and held it up for Orlot to see.
Why does this matter?
He growled.
You are the ones,
Orlot gasped.
He whose voice drowns out all others has identified this. You are Enki Vahakan. You,
those who hold the key of victory.
Ka! Ka! Yes.
So he fears us.
Orlot shook his head.
Nen, he will take the key from you, for the woe is already within you.
Woe? The Herit Vertenebal Mor, the bad shadow. The Heritor's bad shadow.
Yes, it was cast upon you a long age ago, Mordecai.
McCall glared into the Damagower's eyes. He relaxed his grip.
Next question,
he whispered.
How do we get out of here?